Apart from Lake's Tax Advisors, where Ron Berg and his staff offer tax, accounting, and payroll services for Minnesota businesses, with locations in Grand Rapids and Rush City, more information at lakes.tax.
Coming up, we've got the Up North Report. We have an update from Brainerd, where four people working at a Mexican restaurant there were arrested by immigration agents yesterday. And we've also got an update on the federal court hearings that were yesterday in Minneapolis for Homeland Security's Operation Metro Surge.
This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker. We are people-powered radio in northern Minnesota. Join us at KAXE.org.
John's going to bring us his full phenology report at 7:20-ish today. We've also got best wishes, and we'd love to hear from you this morning. What have you been seeing? You can text 218-326-1234. What's at your bird feeder? We always love knowing things like that.
Yeah, indeed we do.
It is 7:01. News is next.
For KAXE News, I'm Larissa Donovan with the Up North Report. Four people were arrested by immigration agents on Monday in downtown Brainerd with assistance by the Crow Wing County Sheriff's Office. Chelsea Perkins has more.
According to a news release, deputies with the Sheriff's Office were asked to assist a Homeland Security investigation team with executing two federal arrest warrants. The release did not provide clarity about why four people were arrested, if there were just two arrest warrants, and did not identify the individuals taken into custody without incident. A request for comment from ICE was not returned as of late Monday afternoon. The exact location was not disclosed in the release, but sources with knowledge of the incident say the arrest took place at El Potro Mexican Restaurant on South 7th Street. The restaurant was dark and doors were locked later Monday with a sign stating, "We are temporarily closed," taped inside the door. This is a developing story and we'll bring you updates at KAXE.org.
A federal judge heard arguments Monday as she considers a temporary restraining order to pause the Department of Homeland Security's Operation Metro Surge in the Twin Cities. While the U.S. Attorney's Office argued that the estimated 4,000 agents are enforcing federal immigration laws, the Minnesota Attorney General's Office claims the surge is violating the state's rights under the 10th Amendment and the Anti-Commandeering Doctrine. The intent of U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi's letter to Governor Tim Walz over the weekend was a topic of much debate. The letter was written Saturday, the same day 37-year-old Alex Preddy was shot and killed by federal agents in Minneapolis. In the letter, Bondi alludes to ending the operation if Minnesota hands over driver's license records, voter information, and other data, as well as end the sanctuary city policies of Minneapolis and St. Paul. Bondi's letter also demands the state's Department of Corrections to cooperate with ICE. The DOC has aggressively pushed back on this, saying it has always facilitated state-to-federal custody handoffs. After nearly 3 hours, Judge Kate Menendez said she would issue a written opinion. Also Monday, Trump and Walz confirmed they had a productive conversation regarding the operation, including impartial investigations into the two shooting deaths of Minnesotans, as well as reducing the number of agents. Prosecutors dropped a charge of assaulting a federal agent against 19-year-old Jose Espinoza Espinoza after a court appearance in Duluth on Monday morning. The government did not present any witnesses to meet its burden to establish probable cause and instead moved to dismiss the complaint. He had been accused of ramming his car into a government vehicle and injuring an agent's finger when he accelerated as the agent tried to open his car door on January 16th outside a Mexican restaurant in Virginia. According to the complaint, the car had been previously ID'd by U.S. Border Patrol as being suspected of transporting undocumented people. The Times reported the case appears to be the first example of the Justice Department backing away from an assault case against a federal agent in Minnesota since the surge began. As Minnesotans across the state continued to gather in protest and remembrance, Chelsea visited a vigil on Saturday outside the Crow Wing County Jail in Brainerd. Here's her report.
Tears rolled down Ava Capel's cheeks as emotion overcame her.
I just never thought this was something I would see. It's awful.
The 18-year-old Brainerd High School student and her mother, Tessa Capel, drove from Nisswa to participate in the event in 21 below zero with wind chill. Tessa Capel said after the deadly shooting of Alex Pretty that morning in Minneapolis, she learned of the vigil and felt compelled to take part.
I am out here for my community, my kids, my future grandkids, my state. I just feel like it's such a huge violation of our rights as human beings, and it's time for us to stand up and speak out. It doesn't have to be political. It has to be about human rights.
About 300 people lined both sides of Laurel Street for the vigil organized by Brainerd Lakes Area Indivisible. The original intent was to draw attention to what's going on inside the Crow Wing County Jail, where dozens of immigrants are being detained on behalf of Immigration and Customs Enforcement. But Pretty's death was on many people's minds. Find photos at KAXC.org. We'll also be bringing you more reporting on the Crow Wing County Jail and ICE, so stay tuned for that. Chelsea Perkins, KAXC News.
That's it for the Up North Report. From the KAXC News Desk, I'm Larissa Donovan, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXC is sponsored by Woodland Bank, dedicated to serving local businesses, families, and nonprofits in our area since 1920. You can find more information online at woodland.bank.
It is 7:06 and you are tuned into the Tuesday Morning Show. We are People Powered and Independent KAXC. We've got more news coming up from Morning Edition, including President Trump's trip today to Iowa to try to change the subject from ICE to economic agendas. And we're getting political reaction from our state in Minnesota. Stay tuned. I'm Heidi Holton with John Latimer.
We receive support from Timberlake Lodge and Hotel in Grand Rapids, where on-site amenities include a restaurant with a full bar and a grand splash pool area with water slide and hot tub. Further details are available at TimberlakeLodgeHotel.com.
We'll be talking to Tornado Bob in our 8 o'clock hour. If you have a weather question for him, you can text 218-326-1234. We have a slight chance of snow and flurries today, mostly to partly sunny and cold, high 0 to 6, and tonight lows 9 below to 16 below. I always find it funny that the Weather Service has to tell us it's cold.
Probably yeah, well, cold,
you know.
Open your front door.
You know.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Michelle Martin. Good morning. President Trump is heading to Iowa today, where he's hoping to change the subject a bit to his economic agenda as his administration faces growing outrage over his immigration crackdown in Minnesota.
Yeah, not only Democrats, but more Republicans are calling for changes, at least in Trump's message, after a second U.S. citizen was shot dead by a federal agent. Some are also criticizing the substance of an immigration operation that has led to widespread chaos and death.
NPR White House correspondent Franco Ordonez will be traveling with the president to Des Moines, and he's with us now. Good morning, Franco.
Good morning, Michelle.
So what do we know about the president's trip to Iowa?
Yeah, the president is expected to visit a local business and give a speech on the economy. His chief of staff has touted the trip as the beginning of what will soon be weekly travel in support of Republican candidates ahead of the midterms. But as you noted at the top, it's also part of an effort to, you know, wrestle back control of the narrative on his own terms.
And look, we've talked about this repeatedly. There is growing outrage about this immigration operation in Minneapolis. So does the trip play into all that? Or how does this sort of trip work with all that going on in the background?
Yeah, I mean, the administration has been struggling to promote Trump's economic agenda amid a number of crises, you know, abroad and here in the U.S. And the situation in Minneapolis has only just made it harder to talk about the things that Trump wants to talk about. I was speaking with Ryan Williams, a veteran Republican strategist. He told me that the trip is clearly part of Trump's effort to turn the page.
The primary news story at the moment isn't just the ICE-related shooting. It's the response to the ICE-related shooting. That's what's going to be the focus. And the president can attempt to focus on the economy, on what he views are successes of his administration on the economic front. But he's going to be stuck talking about this issue for a significant period of time.
And again, you mentioned how some Republicans are calling for more investigations into the second death. There are also risks of a government shutdown being fueled by the controversy.
Would you say a bit more about the increasing pressure from his own party? I mean, that does feel different considering how reliably Republicans have backed the president.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it certainly created some fissures within the party, and not at a good time when election season is coming up fast. As I mentioned, a number of Republican lawmakers are pushing for more details. We also heard this weekend from Republican Governor Kevin Stitt of Oklahoma. He's questioning Trump's broader goals. Here he is on CNN.
Now Americans are asking themselves, what is the end game? What is the solution? And, you know, we believe in federalism and state rights, and nobody likes feds coming into their state. And so what's the goal right now?
And polls, Michelle, show that more Americans feel ICE tactics are going too far.
So how is the White House responding?
Well, at first, top officials rushed to declare the U.S. citizen killed as a domestic terrorist. But Trump is now trying to strike a softer tone. You know, he says an investigation is ongoing and even boasted of a productive call with Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, as we heard earlier. But I will tell you, Michelle, his team is not really letting up. Caroline Leavitt, his press secretary yesterday, put the blame directly at the feet of Walz and Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey for what she called their hostile resistance to the work of federal agents. So tensions around the immigration operations remain high.
That's White House correspondent Franco Ordonez. Franco, thank you.
Thank you, Michelle.
How do voters view all of this? We've called Sarah Longwell, who is a political consultant and pollster and publisher of the conservative website The Bulwark. Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, so I understand that you had a focus group last night with some swing voters, people who voted for Biden in 2020 and then Trump in 2024. What was it like and what did you hear?
Well, here's the most remarkable thing about this story, which is that everybody had organically heard about it. One of the things that when it comes to voters and big news stories, they're not always connected.
Yeah.
It might be something we're talking about in Washington, but the voters, it hasn't really broken through to them. In both the cases of the shooting of Renee Good and of Alex Pretty, everybody had heard about it. Everybody had seen the videos. And the slight difference, because we've been talking to voters over the last 3 weeks since the shooting of Renee Good, there was much more of a sense after Renee Good's shooting that people said, you know, bad things happen. It's a tragedy, but she shouldn't have been parked there. And maybe she was going to hit him with her car. The Alex Pretty shooting, there's no ambiguity with voters. They are fed up with ICE's tactics. They believe that they voted for Trump to get dangerous criminals off the streets, not to shoot Americans. And so not only had they seen it, but they were dramatically against it.
I want to explain for people who don't follow this every day. When we say focus group, this is a small group of people in a room or on a Zoom call or just talking together, but a small group of people in all walks of life. And you hear their kind of in-depth thoughts and conversations. Is that how this went?
That's right. And when you have polling, you can tell from the polling that the social impact of ICE's actions has led to a major backlash in public opinion. When we do a focus group, we're trying to figure out why. What is it about what's happening that is causing that movement? And in this case, it is the disconnect between what people see as the overzealous actions of ICE, the fact that there are all these troops on the streets, that they're creating chaos, that they're shooting Americans, versus what people wanted when they voted for Trump, which was a secure border and dangerous criminals deported.
Are there two parts to the failure among as perceived by the voters here, one being the actual killing, which people could see for themselves, and the other thing being the obviously false statements that the U.S. government made in our name with our tax dollars?
You know, I would say voters are aware that there is some disconnect, although that tends to not be the locus of their outrage. The locus of their outrage is that they have seen the video. They can tell you chapter and verse, scene by scene, what the ICE agents did wrong. And I think that has captivated people in a way that's slightly different from the way people who follow the news much more closely might understand that the disconnect between sort of the administration, the story they told versus what we actually saw on the ground and how we all know that the administration is lying.
Now, as we heard from Franco Ordonez, the White House has changed course in the last day. In certain ways, they stopped calling the victim a terrorist without actually admitting a mistake. They are making this personnel change in Minnesota. We don't know how long this will last. We know from past experience the president has a tendency after a day or two to revert to his original talking points. But they did make a change here. Is there a connection between that change and public opinion, do you think?
I do. I think that one of the reasons that Republicans often simply just back Trump is because they think that's what the public is demanding of them. In this case, it is loud and clear to people that the public is fed up with having these troops in the streets, with seeing Americans get shot, and the public opinion is very much turning against them on an issue that is supposed to be one of Trump's best issues. And I think that is causing Republicans to get spooked.
Oh, let's talk about that aspect of this. When you say it's supposed to be one of Trump's best issues, it has been. It's one where he has majority support. Does he still have majority support as far as you can tell?
He does not. And I will say there is a slight difference between the border. Voters, they think, yes, we want the border secure. And so he still does all right when it comes to the actual securing of the border. Where he is underwater now is on ICE, is on Border Patrol, is on the actions of deportations. People, the polling on that has completely flipped. He is now well underwater on this issue. And now now we are getting into the territory, not just of the public doesn't approve, but there is an active backlash against your administration on this point.
Briefly, what are voters telling you about the economy, which Trump would rather be talking about, apparently?
Well, I don't know why he'd rather be talking about it, because I don't think that there's anything that voters are more angry about than the state of the economy. If Trump had one job for voters, it was to lower costs, and they do not feel like he's doing it.
Sarah Longwell is publisher of The Bulwark and a political consultant and pollster. Thanks for your insights, as always. Really appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
Another major story we're following is that winter storm. Crews are still working to restore power to thousands of homes in the path of a winter storm that has downed trees and power lines. At least 30 people have died across the more than 30 states affected by the storm. Mississippi, Louisiana, and Tennessee have been the hardest hit with outages. Elise Gregg with Mississippi Public Broadcasting and the Gulf States Newsroom reports freezing temperatures are now worrying officials and residents.
On a power outage map, you can see a trail from northern Louisiana through the Mississippi Delta into Tennessee and Kentucky. Sean Smith moved to Nashville from Michigan just 2 weeks ago and says without power, his house has dropped to near freezing temperatures.
Probably about 40, 20, maybe, I don't know. I had to get out of there and get in my car and get some heat.
He's looking at getting a hotel room if things don't improve soon. In the South, many people depend on electricity for heat. Casey Grist, executive director of North Mississippi Red Cross, says the agency was able to pre-position some supplies to help with the storm, but now there are many places workers are unable to reach with more resources.
To the west in Oxford is completely shut down. Roads are terrible, power outages everywhere, kind of the same in our northern counties.
Oxford is one of the cities most affected by power outages. Its university, Ole Miss, is closed through Sunday. Jeffrey Reed lives in Oxford. He says his neighborhood looks like a war zone. He lost power early Monday morning.
Everything happened in the course of a few hours, and then it just added on for about another three quarters of a day. A giant limb came down and tore the meter pole off the side of the house and the meter.
Several states have deployed National Guard troops to help with recovery. Mississippi's governor says FEMA is distributing 30 generators and fuel. And the state is handing out water, food, and blankets, and warming centers are open across the region. Temperatures well below freezing for a couple more days have officials worried. Louisiana Governor Jeff Landry announced at least three deaths in his state.
I would like to have no more house fires or fire-related events, and certainly no more deaths due to carbon monoxide or hypothermia.
Utility companies say they're making progress in restoring power, but it will take at least several days, if not longer, to return to normal operations. For NPR News, I'm Elise Gregg in Jackson, Mississippi.
This is NPR News.
That is Morning Edition. Updates from National Public Radio. It's 7:19. I'm Heidi Holton with John Latimer. Coming up next, it is John's Nature Report. It is
what?
Phenology. Are you ready?
What?
Are you getting ready over
Phenology?
There? Hey, I see your paper. You've been writing some notes.
Yeah.
Unless you're just doodling over there. I don't know. Drawing little faces. It's very cute. He's not laughing. He's actually... I'd like to think it was so funny that I made you cough like that, but that's not the case. You got a little tickle there.
I caught a little something.
Okay.
Yeah.
It seems like it's going around. Multiple people on staff are feeling the congestion and staying home to try.
You know, it's right now respiratory. I don't feel bad. I just don't breathe good. Mm-hmm. I sound like I'm breathing through a sack of, I don't know, wet marbles. Anyway. I feel all right. I just don't sound very good, so stick with me. We receive support from Boreal Brushworks Painting in Bemidji, providing full-service interior painting in residential locations throughout northern Minnesota, offering custom kitchen cabinet refinishing, as well as one-room or whole-house repainting. More information at borealbrushworkspainting.com.
Tomorrow is a big day. The Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness permits will be available. They're beginning at 9 a.m. tomorrow for the 2026 season. You can book reservations online at recreation.gov-bwcaw or call 877-444-6777. Visitors are encouraged to review the trip planning guide. Do your homework for the more than 265 backcountry campsites. I bet some people take off work to make sure they can get there.
Yeah. Well, you know, some of those weekends and some of those campsites are really, really popular.
Mm-hmm.
I remember 1,000 years ago going to Temperance River and getting this lovely campsite. This was when there was just one campground there, and it was on the southwest side of the river of the Temperance. And there was one campsite way down at the end of the campgrounds where you kind of walked in a little trail. And you had the whole place to yourself. And it was, we just happened to drive in and got the place. And it was like delightful. And I keep thinking, I'll bet you that one is reserved every day from opening to closing during the summer. And that's just on the North Shore. If you went into the Boundary Waters, there are others just like that. So,
yeah, I got to go last fall to, I love Temperance River area, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, all the state parks going up the shore are great, but that, I don't know, there's something about that one.
The Temperance is one of my favorites, and more so, I think, because one of my good friends lost his life there, but it's an amazing spot and lovely. We receive support from Happy Dancing Turtle, an organization dedicated to growing stewards. Registration now open for the 20th annual Back to Basics Sustainable Living event being held at Pine River Bacchus School on Saturday, February 7th. More at happydancingturtle.org.
This Thursday, Itasca Waters has their special Practical Water Wisdom webinar. It's at noon with Sarah Elliott. You can explore how wildfires are affecting the health of water. Register at itascawaters.org.
It's time for the Phenology Show. Phenology is the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. And there are a couple of things on the top of my list to talk about today. One, of course, is that this is the beginning of the courtship season for all of the canids, all of the foxes and the coyotes and the wolves. They're all getting ready to find a mate. Maybe they found a mate, but they're definitely going to be acting out the whole dance that is mating and courtship. And they will mate in February. Their young will be born in April. 63 days, I think, is the gestation time for most canids. 60 days, somewhere in there, 2 months. And they time their young, their offspring's birth to coincide with the birth of a lot of things like rabbits and groundhogs coming out of hibernation and just a whole host of food sources that are going to show up about the time their little ones are looking for a good protein meal. So it's all pretty well scheduled, and it starts right now, well, beginning in February is when we typically think about the what I used to laughingly call the dances of wolves. And it is because they will be, the wolves in particular, will gather probably on a lake somewhere, and there'll be a frisky kind of a frolicking going on. The alpha male and the alpha female will mate, and there will be offspring. Sometimes those can, that arrangement can be abridged. It's not always the alpha male and alpha female, but at any rate, it is the time of year when that begins to happen. And what signs do I look for this? All I have to do is walk down my driveway. Now, I live a bit remote. I'm about 8 miles out of town. I'm in the woods, and my driveway is 3/10 of a mile long. And along that stretch, because I keep it plowed, it becomes a kind of a walkway for, well, this week it was coyotes. I have had wolves in the past, and I know that the foxes frequent the area. Usually they stay out on the lake, or they more are in the fields and the grassy areas. But they do oftentimes use my driveway as well. This past week, it was coyotes, and I could see their tracks in the snow along the edge of the driveway. And then there were all of these little spots along the road, usually where a balsam had set a branch down to about the edge of the snowbank. And they come along and they pee on that branch, and they pee, it drops into the snow below. And it's a sign. It's a signpost to other coyotes walking the same trail, and to my dog. She stops, and she always volunteers to leave a little message of her own. I don't know how the coyotes interpret that, but I know they're not particularly afraid of her. They walked right through one walked right through my yard about 2 weeks ago. So they don't seem to mind that she is there. I'm sure that if they had the chance, they'd turn her into a healthy meal for them and their offspring. But so far, that opportunity hasn't arisen for them, and I'm grateful. But they are leaving these signposts. The other thing they will do is leave scat. They will poop along the trail. And it's just another way of advertising their presence to the other animals that are out there. I have, in the past, come across some rather prodigious signposts that the coyotes have left. And I know that this is the time of year when they will be actively doing it again. So keep an eye out for that if you're out in the country a little bit. Probably not going to see it in town, but you might, along the edge of the lakes, if you live in town, you might find some tracks from the foxes. Besides the active canid love story that is taking place right now, other animals, the great horned owls, are probably just about ready to begin nesting. This is the time of year when the great horned owls start to lay their eggs and will have their babies born. It's a January courtship. It's a February on the nest. The babies hatch after about a month. And then mom sits with the babies until they're quite large. And the father is responsible for bringing food to the nest. And if the number of rabbits in my yard is any indication, it'll be a good year for little baby owls. It'll be a great year to be a little baby owl in the nest, because I think there'll be a lot of rabbits coming in over the edge of the nest, and the baby owls will get fed. Couple of notes this past week that were reinforced by some notes from some of the folks that I regularly communicate with. I had written in my notes that I had not seen any red poles or pine siskins so far this winter, and I have not heard many reports of them. There are plenty of reports of pine grosbeaks. a few reports of evening grosbeaks, but basically there are not very many finches in the area. And one of the notes that I got came from Steve Wilson, who is a retired DNR, lives up in the Isabella area, and they have one of the, probably one of the most vibrant Christmas bird counts of any place I've ever been party to. I have not been able to attend, but I read the notes assiduously each year. This year they had not very many birds, but they had 55 people show up to help count those birds. And that is incredible. I mean, when you think of where Isabella is, if you took the entire population of downtown Isabella, you wouldn't probably get 55 people. But they all gathered and they had a great time, but they were woefully short of the finches, the pine siskins, the red poles, crossbills, grosbeaks. They had a few crossbills, a few grosbeaks, no siskins and no red poles. And Steve went on to sort of outline what happens, why that happens in certain years. And one of the things that created that situation is that the all of the finches that we think about, the grosbeaks and the pine siskins and the red poles, are seed eaters, and they mostly eat the seeds of trees. And oftentimes trees can both have, in one year they might have a massed crop, a huge crop of seeds, and the following year they might have none. The birches around my house 2 years ago had multiple female seed cones, seed catkins, all over them. And the seeds were scattered over the top of the snow like so much snowflakes. I mean, really, just everywhere you looked. This year, there were no or very few female seed cones. And in fact, the one tree that I very carefully observe each year, my birch tree that I carefully observe for my National Phenology Network reporting, had no female seed cones this year. They just did not, the tree just did not produce any. And so there aren't a lot of seeds around my house for them to eat. There are apparently a lot of seeds in Canada because the birds are not coming south. And it's not cold that drives them south, it's food supplies. They'll put up with whatever temperature comes along. They're like me as a child. I had no idea how cold it was going to be the next day because the weather service wasn't developed yet. And so I just lived from day to day, and they lived the same way. As long as there's food available, they don't care if it's 40 below or 20 below or 20 above. It's all the same to them, so they just kind of hang in there. But this year, most of those finches are somewhere else, not here. And if you have some of them, I'd certainly like to hear about it, but I'm not hearing very many reports of it, so I suspect that it's not just me. I think it's just, in general, there haven't been a lot of little finches down this way. This note came from Joel Rosen, who's an excellent phenologist over in Mattawa. And he said that songbirds have been somewhat scarce since the appearance of a northern shrike. Usually when the shrike perches over the feeder, there are a couple of chickadees that don't seem to have gotten the news. But this time, not a songbird was to be seen the entire time the shrike was perched. Since that time, songbird observations are pretty scarce until this afternoon. There were 3 male and 1 female pine grosbeak, 7 goldfinches, a white-breasted nuthatch, 4 starlings, and the usual suspects. Pine grosbeaks have been irregular visitors since November. They don't seem to hang around very long when they do show up. He goes on to mention the sizable flocks of goldfinches and purple finches that were visitors all spring, summer, and fall left months ago, with the last sighting of purple finches on October 9th. Much as you have noted, he means me, The four woodpecker species have been pretty steady customers all winter. No sightings of red poles or pine siskins yet. No chickadee spring songs yet. And I have not heard the chickadee singing the Phoebe song yet at my house. So inexplicably late, perhaps, but we will wait to see. Still wondering why local chickadees are so pessimistic. Balsam needles and remnant oak leaves are still littering the ski tracks every time the wind gets going. As long as the temperature stays low, they don't stick to the hard wax. And then he completes what is a really interesting long email, but he says, hoping to find another 2 to 3 months of snow cover. On the plus side, I've tightened up my pole straps, my ski pole straps, to fit regular cross-country ski gloves rather than the choppers I've been using for most of the past week. And that pretty well sums up what the weather's been like around here. So basically, Steve Wilson and Joel Rosen are reporting, you know, few and far between in terms of the winter finches that we're used to seeing. At my house, I've had a couple of developments, and I don't know if it's a cold weather or what exactly, but on Friday, I had, for the first time that I realized, I had two female hairy woodpeckers on my bird feeder at the same time. And typically, I see a female or a male, and I don't know, you know, one from another. I mean, I know the male from the female. But am I seeing the same female repeatedly, or am I seeing two females that are coming independently? I wasn't sure. But on Friday, and it was just sort of a special day because I not only saw two female hairy woodpeckers at my feeder, but on the same day, about 4 hours later, I saw two male downy woodpeckers. And then yesterday, I saw two red-bellied woodpeckers, and I never got a clear look at the second one to see if it was male or female. They were really skittish, and the only one I saw coming to the suet was male. Now, whether it was the same male and the female was just not coming in, or I have two males, I don't know. But usually, I figure in the wintertime, I have one group, one family of woodpeckers of each species. That is, I have a pair of downies, a pair of hairies, a pair of red bellies, a pair of pileateds. This year I have now seen two female hairies, two male downies, two red bellies, unknown species, unknown sex, and just one female pileated. The female pileated keeps coming. I'm not seeing any males along with her. And I don't know what that's all about, but I'll keep a close eye and let you know. While I was walking down my driveway the other day, I came, not only did I have all of these signs of the coyotes and their trip into the land of Amore, but I also saw ruffed grouse tracks. And it's so interesting because they sort of weave like a chain, you know. They take these short steps, so it's one track and then another track and then another, and they're almost linked. And in the new fresh snow, you could see the little projections that come out of the sides of their toes, which make them more buoyant on top of the snow. And not only that, but the way they sort of weave between the stems of the brush that they come to and around the trunks of trees and under this branch and whatnot. It's quite entertaining. And then, of course, it finally walked across the driveway and into the woods on the other side. But I always find some pleasure in looking at the ruffed grouse tracks. By the way, Joel Rosen noted in his accounts that he has on a couple of instances this summer or this winter, come across grouse exploding out of the snow and sort of startling him. That's happened to me, not yet this year, but certainly has happened in the past, and hopefully will happen again. I always look forward to that sort of heart-stopping shock as a bird pops out of the snow and leaves you wondering for about 2 seconds, what on earth was that? The other note, of course, we had some cold temperatures. I had the first temperature of less than 32 below zero. I had 33 below zero on Saturday morning. And that was the coldest temperature that I've recorded so far this winter. I went back and looked through my notes. I had 3 days where the highs were below zero. And from 8 o'clock on Friday, sorry, 8 o'clock on Thursday night until noon on, was it Monday? Yes, noon yesterday. From 8 o'clock Thursday night until noon yesterday, 112 hours of below zero temperatures. We did not, for 3 days, three straight days, we did not have a high temperature above zero. So kind of one of those, you know, just got to kind of pull your hat down a little lower and put your choppers on and sort of let it go. I did notice on the morning when it was 33 below zero that it was about 10 after 8 before the first bird showed up at the bird feeder. And on a morning like this where it's not nearly that cold, I would expect that they'll be there, oh, within the next few minutes. I'm not home right now, so I can't tell. But generally, I sit and drink coffee in a nice, easy chair where I can sit and look at the bird feeder and bring myself some pleasure at seeing who shows up and when. But it was 8:09 a.m. when I saw first a black-capped chickadee and almost immediately a hairy woodpecker. And they came and began to eat their meal and really had a nice time of it. We heard from Joel about the northern shrike that was at his feeder. Dallas Hudson told me that last Wednesday, I think it was, might have been last Wednesday or last Thursday, one of those 2 days, northern shrike came and caught one of his American tree sparrows. He had three American tree sparrows spending the winter at his house, and now he has two. The shrike caught one of the unsuspecting tree sparrows. I don't know. Generally, they're much further south than this, and maybe they had not experienced northern shrike before, but they definitely know about them. Well, that one knows about them, although it's a little bit too late for him. Don't let it be too late for you. Keep your eyes open, and if you have any of those winter finches, let me know. I would really like to hear about it because I, so far, I'm not seeing very many around here. That's our Phenology show for this week. Thanks for tuning in. If you have comments, questions, or observations to share, please get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you.
That is Phenology, and we'll be talking more Phenology with student reports, nature reports that are coming up before 8 o'clock. Then Tornado Bob in for the big weather picture. Maybe you have a weather question. You can pose it to him. You can text us at 218-326-1234. We did get a couple of texts coming in, John. I love both of them. But Susan from Cotton, she said, as far as what brings me delight, I am with John that nature is on the top of the list, but KXC is not far behind. Walking out with Chico at about 27 below the other day, we ran into this lovely wolf sign. I shared it with Clinton from the bog. Shout out to his ongoing patience with my many, many questions. And he confirms it was a wolf. Also saw some big paws and nose prints. And she's got two delightful photos. One is of Scat. And I just love that that's what we get, and we're happy we get a photo of Scat.
Yeah.
On our text line.
Almost nobody sends us pictures of poop.
Oh, my God. Just brighten my day.
You know, it's what we do.
Yes. And Beth from Aurora says, good morning. This is the second year we have watched a shrike catch a mouse. The shrike sits in an apple tree and watches our bird feeder. When a mouse appears, it flies in to get it so very quickly. Amazing. Thanks, Beth.
Yeah, thank you. What a lovely sight that must be. I saw a rabbit here by our rain garden, and I mentioned to you, Heidi, that I'd hoped that a great horned owl would come by and feed his family, but such was not the case, at least not today. Nature is nature, and things happen out there. Sometimes we get to see them, and other times we only get to hear about them through the luck of one of our other listeners. And though I don't actively go out and hope that I will see some animal become food for another, it is the way of things in nature, and I'm just grateful when that moment happens. I'm honored that I am able to be there and to witness it, and maybe to talk a little bit about it and help people to understand that it's just the way of the world. So, yeah. Yeah, well, we've spent a good deal of time blathering on about nature. It's time to tell you that we receive support from Sanford Bemidji Heart and Vascular Center, expanding cardiology services to our region. More at sanfordhealth.org. And support comes from the Friends of the Rice Lake National Wildlife Refuge near McGregor, offering 18,000 acres of woods, water, and wildlife for the public to experience, located 5 miles south of McGregor on Highway 65. Learn more about Friends of Rice Lake National Wildlife Refuge events and activities on Facebook.
There are lots of things going on in our region. This Thursday, January 29th, the Minnesota Discovery Center in Chisholm has a local history presentation at 6 p.m. You can learn about socialist women of the Iron Range with Ty Hiltonen, free and open to all.
Support for KAXE comes from Northern Lights Nordic Ski Club, a member-supported nonprofit whose mission is to promote cross-country skiing as a healthy family activity. With volunteers who groom and maintain ski trails, membership info, trail maps, and more are available at northernlightsnordic.org.
Minnesota DNR is hosting a public meeting about proposed changes to the public waters inventory list. That is tomorrow at 6 p.m. It's at the Aiken Public Library.
The public waters inventory.
Mm-hmm.
Is that where we get to decide if that's a swamp or a lake?
A lake? Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. We had someone calling about that who was very interested to get to that.
Well, I know there's a great deal of controversy. Not too long ago, Wisconsin came along and said, we have more lakes than Minnesota. Turns out that if a particularly large buck pees in a low spot, they call it a pond. Anything larger than that becomes a lake. I think in Minnesota it has to be more than 10 acres and more than 5 feet deep. I'm not sure. But in order to hold up our position as the number one lake state.
Yeah, maybe.
We may have to alter our definition of lakes.
There is a story that our news team did on it, and they're saying that the Department of Natural Resources is working to add 16 waterways and remove one lake in Aiken County from the state's list of public waters. So you can go there to talk about. So they started doing this inventory update in 2024 after a statute change clarified that public waters are defined by law, not whether they appear on the public water inventory. It's an 8-year project that will update public waters list for 12 counties each year, ensuring the list is accurate to reflect the legal definition of public waters. Okay.
Support for KAXE comes from the Grand Rapids Area Community Foundation, playing a vital role in connecting charitable intentions with community needs. Awarding $30 million in grants and scholarships over the past 30 years to make a lasting impact in our area. More information at gracf.org.
Weather, slight chance of snow and flurries today, mostly to partly sunny and cold, high 0 to 6 with blustery northwest winds 10 to 25. Partly cloudy tonight, lows 9 below to 16 below, and northwest winds 5 to 10. Mostly sunny and cold tomorrow, high 0 to 5, with evening lows from 10 to 17 below zero.
We received support from Klockau Brewing Company in Grand Rapids, making traditional old world styles of beer as well as modern classics for 8 years now. The tap room is open Monday through Thursday, 3 to 8, Friday and Saturday, noon to 8, and Sunday from noon to 6. More information at klockaubrewing.com.
What do you say we do a little birthdays today?
Yeah, we should get right after that.
That's right. Today is January 27th. We have three birthdays in the book.
Yes, it looks like Kim Lindell is 66 today, and Kim is living in Popaski. Luann Blyler, I think.
I think Blyler, yeah.
Blyler is having a birthday today in Solway. Happy birthday, Luann. And Sarah Schumacher is also 66, and her birthday is today, and she is in Minneapolis.
Happy birthday.
Gonna change our way of thinking. We're gonna change not a little but a lot. The way we see each other, the way we treat one another. We're gonna change if we wanna change or not. Our way of living. We're gonna change. That's what we're here to do. The way we treat Mother Earth, our sense of self-worth. We're gonna change if we wanna change or not.
That is new music from Eric Bibb. The song there called Change. He put out a new album this year and 13 are original songs on there. One of the songs, One Mississippi, was written by his high school friend and folk musician, Janice Ian.
Oh,
there
wow.
you go. Eric Bibb bringing us music. You can hear lots of great music throughout our programming, including coming up at 9 o'clock when DJ Dang is your host for Headwaters.
We receive support from Rapids Brewing Company, a place for gathering and community featuring live music multiple times a week, farm fresh food, and rotating beers from their own brew house. More information about their events, music, and menu available at rapidsbrewingco.com. It's time to go back and hear another of our Phenology Talkbacks. Phenology funding for our Phenology Talkbacks is provided in part by the Minnesota Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. Phenology Talkbacks are produced by Charlie Mitchell. And our next report comes from Bertha Hewitt Elementary's trip to Long Lake Conservation Center near Palisade.
Hi, this is Tegan
and Payson from Bertha Hewitt Elementary. During our trip to Long Lake Conservation Center on January 22nd and 23rd, it was really cold. Really, really, really cold with a high temperature of 7 below zero and a low of 30 below zero. It was the coldest temperature of the year. The last time it was cold was February 13th, 2021, when it reached 31 below. Many schools in the state were closed, but it didn't stop us from getting outside and exploring. In the warmth of the day, we bundled up, played snow snakes on the lake, and went cross-country skiing.
We learned that when it gets really cold, trees that are holding lots of moisture can crack and explode. No trees exploded during our trip. We tested a theory with a frozen banana if it can pound in a nail, and it actually did. Then we tested if blown bubbles can freeze. That also happened. Although we went exploring, the mammals seemed to be bundled up. We only noticed a few chickadees, a nuthatch, red-bellied woodpecker, and red and gray squirrels. They grabbed a quick meal of seeds and quickly went back to warm up. It always feels fun to explore nature, and we encourage everyone to unplug, bundle up, get outside, and live connected.
Yeah, thank you, Tegan and Payson. That was a nice report. I'm glad you guys got there. Not only am I glad you got there, but I'm glad you went outside. You know what? I mean, it might be, you might be my age someday, and you'll be telling your grandchildren about how you went outside when it was 30 below zero and you lived through it. It was okay. So, yeah, congrats on that and cross-country skiing. I wanted to expand a little bit about the exploding trees because my daughter sent me a text saying that she had seen this thing about exploding trees. And I reminded her of her youth and how our house would do the same thing. You'd be sitting in the house when it was really cold and the wood would have enough moisture in it that it would freeze. And as everybody knows, when water freezes, it expands. And if you've got it trapped inside of a 6x6 post like at my house, or a 6x6 beam or a 6x8 beam, that water is going to push against that beam until it breaks it, until it cracks it. And what's happening outside is essentially the same thing. And especially maples, if you look at the red maple trunks, you'll see these long fissures that are the result of freezing and cracking. And when that happens, it can be a kind of a sharp noise, a bit like a gunshot, but it's not. And there's no danger. You could wrap your arms around that tree, and when it exploded, all you would feel is a little shiver of energy going through your arms. It would not blow you to the ground or fill you with shrapnel. It's just a little bit of water pushing its way out, and the tree is going to sort of crack open. So
your house did not explode. That's not what you're saying.
No, 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 no. Yeah, it pops.
Yeah, I hear the pops and cracks. That's, of
yeah,
our
I
house.
Think that's yeah. normal for people that live up here. You hear it and you realize, oh, it's cold out, very cold out. We receive support from the Northland Foundation, working within Northeast Minnesota, offering grants, small business supports, and programs to help people and communities working toward a future where everyone feels they belong and can thrive. More at northlandfdn.org.